welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Souls on Fire. This is Joe Trainer, your host. We got a great hour in store for our listeners tonight. Hopefully everyone had a great weekend. Mine was kind of a downer. I was out in South Dakota watching the University of Delaware get beat by South Dakota State. But at the end of the day, it's just a game and it's just a sport, and we have so many things more important and so many blessings, countless blessings that God has bestowed upon us, most of which we're not even aware of. I have a special guest tonight, Michael Rouse. He's the co-founder, president, CEO of ESF Camps and Experiences. For those in the Philadelphia area, the marketing that this company has done, it's just they got to be one of the most successful camp businesses in the industry. I'm looking forward to talking to Michael about that. But found it in Philadelphia. Michael's a Philadelphia native, and it's really up and down the East Coast, and it's so much more than summer camp. He's delved into, helping students with disabilities and the platform that he has to impact athletes, artists, scientists, and everything in between has been amazing. So before I introduce Michael, as we always start the hour, we begin in prayer. So let us do that. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, as Michael and I spend the next hour in faith and fellowship, we ask that our thoughts be your thoughts, that our words be your words, and that our deeds, when we leave here tonight, be your deeds. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. The Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. This program tonight is sponsored by the Knights of Columbus, Peter Morsico. We continue to really appreciate your undying and unwavering support for our program, and particularly this hour on Monday nights, because you've been so generous with your time and your money for this program. So, Michael, welcome to the show. You got me?
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I'm super excited. I want to give a shout-out to Matt Junta. One of the greatest blessings since I started this show back in October is the connectivity. There's no such thing as a coincidence. We talk about that all the time. You know, God using the Holy Spirit to work through us and with us. And a friend of mine, Matt Junta, who started listening to the show 2 months ago, he's like, hey, I got to put you in touch with our founder. Matt works for the 76ers summer camps, recently hired by Michael and his company. But he says, I got to put you in touch with our founder and CEO, because he's an amazing guy and his story is equally amazing. And it's just a blessing. Michael and I started talking about 4 weeks ago. And shortly after that first conversation, I said to myself, I definitely want to get this guy on the show, because he's more than anything, he's a pipe-swinging disciple of Christ. But he's an amazing man, great husband, great father. Michael, as I said earlier, is the president, CEO, and co-founder of ESF Camps and Experiences. Yeah, I'll let Michael talk about that and how the camp idea originated with him. ESF is an acronym for Education, Sports, and Fun. And the funny thing about it, Michael, we'll talk about this, but it was like 30 years of coaching football. People say, oh, that's pretty cool. What do you do in the off season? They don't realize for you to put on those 10 weeks, right? You know, or 12 weeks of you know, enriching the lives of the young people that you're serving. You know, it's another 45 weeks of hustle and full-time, more than full-time work to do that. But obviously, you're one of the most successful camp, you know, owners and really in the East Coast. It's been around for 40 years. We're definitely going to talk about that. Want to talk, you know, certainly talk about how the pandemic has affected, you know, your company. And, you know, I want to talk about a number of things, Michael, but let's start off, talk about your background. You know, you grew up, you went to the Haverford School. So give our listeners an idea of what your background is from a personal standpoint.
Sure, Joe. First of all, I want to thank you for having me. Matt Junta is definitely a rising star within our organization. I'm very grateful for him to make the connection. Here I thought that Matt was asking me for some people I know that I could maybe recommend for the show. And next thing you know, you're like trying to pull me into the show. So first of all, I'm grateful and I'm humbled and looking forward to the next hour with you. So I grew up 53 years old, grew up in the area. My parents, John and Choppy Rouse, I'm the oldest of three. I have a brother who's 4 years younger and a sister who's 7 years younger. Irish Catholic upbringing. My dad went to West Catholic and had to quit school in 10th grade to support my grandmother and his dad who came down with MS. And my dad never got a chance to finish high school and never had the shot to go to college. So that kind of upbringing that he had transferred over to when he got married and had us kids. There was definitely no handouts in the family, you know, for instance, like allowances and other things like that. So sports was a big thing in our family. We all played sports, and I attended St. Aloysius Academy in Bryn Mawr.
He didn't just play sports. He played professional tennis, and he's also in the Villanova Hall of Fame. We will have him in on another hour to talk about some of his exploits on tennis. But he's more than just a sports guy. He's a Hall of Fame athlete at Villanova, great tennis program. But now I'm going to turn it back. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, that's nice of you to say. But so there was really no handouts like the allowances that you know some people got back then or today. But I had a chance to go to St. Aloysius Academy in Bryn Mawr. And started there in kindergarten, went through eighth grade, and then had a choice that my dad gave me, and it was, do I want to go to, you know, a place like St. Joe's Prep, which is where most of my friends were going, or if I wanted to go local. And I was fortunate enough to visit and to check it out and at all these different schools. But for me, sports was like a priority for me, and so you know, I was playing hockey back then, and I was also playing competitive tennis. And some of the schools that I visited, including the prep, at that time did not have a hockey team or a tennis. So I decided to go to the Haverford School, which was where a couple of our neighbors were going to school. They were coming from, some of them were coming from St. Aloysius. Others were already students at Haverford. And so I had a chance to do that. And it was a great 4 years of my life for high school. Met some really great people. But it was also a place where I started my business when I was 15 as a freshman to pay for tournaments that I would play. Like I said, there were no handouts. So my dad...
Don't minimize that, Michael. Tell the audience, that's a great story. And hopefully there's some young listeners out there that are here. This thing started out with a vision and some fortitude and some stick-to-itiveness. And really blossomed into a lifelong career and an incredibly, incredibly successful business. So you told me that story a couple weeks back. Tell our audience the story about, you know, that initial summer that led to the following summer and then thereafter. It's a great story.
Yeah, so, you know, growing up, like I said, there was no handout. So my dad always had us out working. If we ever wanted to do something, we needed to earn money. And so the great thing about it is we would do you know, odd jobs. He was in construction. We'd also do caddying at the local golf course. And then for that particular summer, 1982, I got a chance to play some national tennis tournaments. I would always apply for applications to tournaments. I would get my own ride. So I was kind of in charge of the sport that I loved to play. And it kind of was what was the driving factor of, like, I handled everything, you know, when it came to this. I didn't need my parents to do that. I was fully, you know, embraced into the sport, and so I was fortunate enough to get sponsored by, you know, some athletic attire, sneakers and shirts, and then rackets because of my ranking, And so playing these national tournaments were really going to be important for me to maintain and to be able to get the free stuff that comes with it. So
sure.
I, in 1982, needed about $1,800. And the summer before, when I caddied and did odd jobs, I made $1,000 for about 9 weeks. I said to my dad, you know, this year the national starts in the middle of July. So do you want the good news or the bad news? And he said, well, what's the bad news? And I said, the bad news is I can't work because I've got to go to nationals. So I'm wondering if I could borrow, you know, $1,800. And he said, and before I answer the question, what's the good news? And I said, the good news is if I get a national ranking, I'll be able to get a free scholarship to college. And he said, well, let's make it clear. You will be going to college, whether you have to pay for it or not. College is going to be something that you need to go to because I didn't get a chance, and you need to go and be the first Rouse to ever go to college. So I said, okay, great. Well, what about that loan? And he said, no, you're going to have to do something you love in a shorter period of time. And so figure out something to do that you'll make more money in that short period of time. So I was kind of feeling a little down and went to sleep that night, woke back up and said to my dad, I think I want to do a two-week tennis camp. We've done it before, like, you know, a clinic here, a clinic there. And this is my idea. And he said, well, where are you going to run it? And I said, I'm going to run it at Haverford. He said, well, how are you going to borrow the court? So I said, no, I'm going to borrow it, not rent them. He said, okay, how are you going to borrow them? And I said, well, I'm going to see if I could pay them after we run the camp. And he said, that's a pretty good idea. Why don't you offer them a percentage of what you make? And I said, all right, well, how does that work? So my dad, who was very street smart, suggested, you know, offer them this opportunity, and perhaps that might work. So I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And my dad said, well, don't forget, your brother is going to be involved in you with you as well. He was 11 at the time. So he and I, the next day, marched into the head of school's office and said, we've got this great idea. Could we borrow the tennis courts? And the head of school said, what do you mean, rent, right? And we said, no, it's borrow the courts, and we'll pay you a percentage of what we make. And so we had about 75 reasons why this would be really great for the school. And every fourth one was because we needed to make money. And I think we were at number 60 or 61, and finally the head of school said, wait, I've said yes three times. Why are you rushing through this? If you go to 64, I'm going to say no. And I said, you mean we can do this? And he said, yes, you can do it if you do three things. Number one, if you get a rider, an insurance policy. I said, well, how much is that? He said, well, the policy will be $100,000. And I said, well, Mr. Parker, if I had $100,000, I wouldn't be here in your office. He said, no, it'll be a rider. It'll cost you about $100 after the summer's over, so we'll put you on our rider. And I said, okay, what's number two? He said, number two is I want you to just make sure you run a really safe camp, and the percentage of what you'll make, you know, will be XYZ. So we said, okay. And I said, what's number three? He said, there's a woman who cleans bathrooms here at night. She works two jobs. I want her two kids to go to camp for free. And I said, well, what's two extra kids? No problem. And he said, all right, just make sure all three of those things you do. And sure enough, those were the three things that we did, and that's now maybe an 18-page contract today, 40 years later,
sure.
That we've used at pretty much all the institutions we're at, and it's been an unbelievable experience ever since.
Now, it says you have 250,000 alumni in that span. That's incredible. Like, on a given pre-pandemic, and now we're going to have a great summer this summer, ESF, post-pandemic, in a given summer, how many different sites will you be on up and down the East Coast, Michael?
So we're at around 12 different locations. We're very fortunate enough to run programs at some of the most top independent private schools up and down the East Coast in about six different states. Then we also run the programs, the youth development programs for the Philadelphia 76ers, the Philadelphia Phillies, also Arsenal, which is part of the Premier
sure.
League soccer, and we just signed the Brooklyn Nets as well. So we're very fortunate to run these top programs for some professional teams as well.
At what point did you get into the professional teams? How long ago?
About 26 years ago, we had it's funny because we still talk about it today. Our relationship with the Philadelphia Phillies is very special and unique. We have been working with some of the the people, the same people since day one. And the Phillies actually came to us because there was a few of the front office executives who were sending their kids to our camps at Haverford. And I think that they were not wild about the former operator. And so my cousin was actually attending the camp that they a former operator used to run. And I remember he would come on the weekends, and he'd be wearing this painter's cap that had the Phillies logo on it. And he'd have a T-shirt, which was almost like see-through. And I was just like, what is that? And so I knew a little bit about what the camps were about. He was kind of saying it was, you know, baseball was really important to him, but he wasn't really wild about the camp. And that was the year that we were benchmarking a lot with Disney. And it was the beginning of about a 12-year relationship with Disney, where we got to know people within Michael Eisner's organization, the executives who was running Disney. And he gave us an opportunity to go behind the scenes to see how they do their quality service and their training of their staff members, and how they mitigate any chances of any type of kidnapping procedure. So we were going down a road of development, which for my brother and I and the people that worked with us, we were learning best of class, you know, best practices. So when the executive called me from the Phillies to say, oh, we'd love to talk to you about taking over our programs, we actually said, no, thank you, but we're not interested.
Wow.
And that word got back to some of the key people at the Phillies, who then sent the gentleman back to speak to us. And I think he was an intern at the time. And he said, I was asked by the executive, you know, team to ask you give us a wish list. And so my brother and I started to put together a wish list. And I think after like the 11th item or the 12th item, we started to look at each other and say, all right, we're never going to get this, but we might as well give them, you know, some great feedback as to what would really have to happen for those camps to really turn around. And it was, you know, we want to have great players come in and speak to the kids about character development. We wanted to have real uniforms. We wanted to have a chance to bring the kids down on the ball field, and, you know, so many different things. And we knew that we were never going to get this. And we gave them a list of 37 things that would be on our wish list items for them to actually, you know, allow. That's where we would be convinced that we would actually run their camps. And so
sure.
They came back saying yes to everyone except for the last bullet point. And
wow,
we couldn't believe
impressive.
It. And
you know what? That's got to be.
The last bullet point was they ran some adult programs in Clearwater called Dream Week. And we knew that Dream Week was a really incredible experience where people would play with legends and it would be a great opportunity.
Sure.
But we heard through the grapevine that it was not providing the type of experience that some people thought it would be. And so we said, all right, in order for us to run your kids' camps, we'd want to run your adult programs as well, because it's all about protecting the brand. And we would never want somebody to go to the adult program and say it was a terrible experience and think that we were running that. So the vice president calls me into his office and says, look, here's the deal. We've had a long relationship with this other operator for 20 years. We've never had a problem with it. We don't understand why you're asking for another different program. And we said, well, we just think that this is really important about protecting the Phillies brand and doing, you know, the best job possible for you from, you know, young kids all the way up to your oldest, you know, young campers, be it adults who want to play baseball with legends. And so we just thought it would be best under one umbrella. And so the vice president said to me, I'll tell you what, you turn around our kids' camps, and we'll have another discussion about the adult camps. And so it was within a year, we actually won an award from Major League Baseball for best youth development programs. And when I got the letter from Major League Baseball, I gave it to the vice president. He asked me to come in, and he called up the operator and basically said, well, your services are no longer needed. And he said, I'm honoring my word. Here you go.
That's
and so that
awesome.
Became the Phillies Fantasy Camp, which we were very excited to get. And we've now just celebrated our 20th anniversary where we'll take about 200 adults down to live their Major League Fantasy in Clearwater in January every year. And men and women, all different ages from 30 to 82. And it is incredibly fun to watch people, you know, whatever age they are, 52, become an 11-year-old very quickly.
That's cool. That's cool. What a great blessing for you to be exposed to Eisner at Disney. You know, nobody does it better than Disney, right? I mean, all the things you probably learned with you from that experience. I know you're a graduate of the Disney Institute, People Management, Customer Service, and Creative Leadership. So that had to be a blessing for you to get really, you know, behind the scenes with Mr. Eisner and the Disney Corporation.
It has. It's been a real influence on me to really want to wow people. And, you know, whether they're adults or kids, our job is to bring out the best in others. And Disney was a real great kind of launching pad for me to really see, how they do it on a day-to-day basis. And it was a real pleasure getting a chance to get to know a lot of the executives down there in Orlando for about 10 years where we would do a lot of benchmarking with them.
That's awesome. I know we're going to shift gears here for a second. You know, I know you've come back to some of your spiritual influences in the early part of your life. Obviously, you're raised Irish Catholic, two, you know, stalwart parents, faith a big part of the family experience. But I want to talk about your wife's influence over your faith. You and I talked at length the last time we were speaking, and, you know, her ability to just kind of inspire you by the way she lives her life and her devotion to her faith. Let's talk about your wife for a couple minutes here. Sounds like a beautiful woman.
Yeah, she is. She's been a big influence for me at the time when I probably needed it most. When it comes to the influence over my faith, She came from a family who moved around a lot. Her dad was a banker who moved his family from London to different parts of the East Coast and eventually to South America. Moving around causes challenges for a family, and especially when there are young children involved. Karina's mom and dad separated when they were living in Bogota, Colombia, and she and her mom and two brothers moved to Florida, South Florida, where her grandparents were, and started a new chapter in life. And you know, struggle was definitely part of her family's life, and they dealt with it head on. And Karina and her mom's faith was really what helped them navigate through the difficult periods when life was a real challenge. And when I met her a couple years before we started dating, I was immediately intrigued by her poise and her calmness and her grace and her beauty inside and out. Quite frankly, I never met someone like her before. And when we eventually started dating, I soon realized that she was a daily communicant, which really amazed me and eventually inspired me to want to learn more and to figure out, you know, what, you know, my parents, my dad was a daily communicant, my grandparents were, but for someone so young, I was just intrigued by what got her to go to Mass every day. I was struggling in during Lent to go even a second day of the week and trying to kind of try to check that box, and the fact that she was going every day of her life was truly inspiring.
That's pretty awesome. Talk about your young kids for a minute, if you would, too, Michael.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I've got four. I got married when I was 44 years old. I was fortunate enough to wait as I was building my business. That, you know, I really decided I'm going to try to find, when the time is right, I want to find somebody who has that level of kind of, that hits all the boxes for me with faith and strong values, and who just, you know, checks all the boxes. And I said to myself, I don't care if I'm 90 years old, I'm going to wait. I see the marriage that my parents had, which they would be celebrating their 55th wedding anniversary this come June. My grandparents on my mom's side, you know, they were, you know, both 100 and 101, you know, when they passed, and they were married for over 70 years. And so, you know, I was looking to to do this the right way once. And so for me, it was just a special part of just growing up and eventually finding that soulmate. And so we got married 10 years ago. We have four beautiful children. We have three boys and one beautiful little girl. Finn, Shane, and Brody are my boys. And my daughter, Naomi Grace, is 18 months old. She was born November 2019. And we've been blessed with someone who is absolutely incredible. She was born with a genetic disorder at birth. And you know, there's only probably 40 cases in the world since 1950. So we're not putting much energy into the cases over the last 70 years. And we're really focused on, you know, a miracle, and also the fact that here's a little girl who's got so much drive and passion for life, and we're seeing a miracle every day with her, just with what she, you know, the smiles and the happiness that comes from it.
That's pretty awesome. Talk about, you know, and I feel like for me, other than just paying homage on a daily basis, talk about how does your soul get fed by going to Mass every day? What is it about the daily Mass and the sacrament of Mass daily that kind of feeds your soul every day?
You know, for me, Joe, it's daily Mass fuels my day. It allows me to really show gratitude for what I've got. It also prepares me sometimes for the daunting tasks that I may have in front of me, where I rely heavily on the Holy Spirit as my business partner. It also helps me fall on my faith when things get tough by falling forward rather than backwards. You know, I just taught my kids how to skate, and you know, you always teach someone when they're skating, you know, to fall forward versus backwards, where you'll hurt your head. Mm. And I try to really use that metaphor with my kids, not only to fall forward in sports, but also by using your faith. And look, you're going to fail in life. Everyone does from time to time. You just have to embrace it and do it with your faith, and that is what will get you through it.
That's pretty awesome. I want to ask you, we were talking to go, and I was heading down to Alabama for a football game, and you were saying, hey, you got to go by Hainesville, Alabama, and you got your wife on the phone, and we were talking about that. Talk about your pilgrimage down there for a 24-hour jaunt to the shrine down there in Hainesville, Alabama.
Yeah, so this was something I kept hearing about in Alabama from my wife when we were dating, and she went every year since she was about a teenager, like 18 years of age, when they reached Florida, to just go to this shrine. And it's a special place. First of all, Alabama, I think, has 5% of the population is actually Catholic, and so there is a EWTN network was started by a woman who is a nun and who passed away a couple years ago. But she was traveling through Alabama, and all of a sudden, I don't know if she was getting gas or going to somewhere in Florida, but the Holy Spirit came upon her and said, you need to build a shrine for me here. And she was in Hainesville, and it was just beautiful, kind of rolling hills. And she went to the local real estate agent to find out how much the land was. And sure enough, with three families, they bought the land and built this incredible shrine, which you feel like you're in the south of France or somewhere in Europe. It is just spectacular. And so I kept hearing about it from my wife. And shortly after we got married, we had one of our first kids. I was having some challenges with just everyday life. And I remember being a little bit frustrated. I was coming back from a meeting, and I think I was driving back from New York or Connecticut. And I said, you know, I would just love to go to the shrine that you keep telling me about. You know, where is this place? And she tells me, and I said, I'll tell you what, if you can be ready in 4 hours, let's go. And she's like, what? And I said, no, I want to see it. I'm all about checking this thing out. Let's just you know, we've got no kids. We didn't have our first child yet. And so we had no kids. And so sure enough, I met her at the airport. We jumped on a plane and we went to Huntsville. And it was 24 hours. I was blown away. I was blown away just because, first of all, it's the middle of nowhere. Second of all, I was blown away by the amount of the vision that this nun had to build a shrine dedicated to her faith. And then I got a chance to meet the priests and the nuns who were working there, and it was transformative for me because life kind of slowed down very quickly, and you were able to kind of put things in perspective. And that 24-hour trip for me was I think significant. It was transformative for me because I was just, again, learning more about my faith and why I needed to get closer to God. And that was before I became a daily communicant. And so it was one of the key trips for me and moments, milestones for me where I started to say, I need to start going to Mass every day.
That's pretty awesome. Folks, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back for the last half hour. It's great stuff. Michael Rouse, CEO, founder, owner of ESF Camps. We'll be back after these brief messages.
My friends, it is you who have stood lockstep with us in underpinning our apostolate by your powerful prayers and sacrificial financial giving. We have no doubt that you surely are the angels the Lord said he would send to us, and we are forever grateful. These are urgent times, and we need to proclaim the truth of God's word, which alone can set us free. And we need to bring the Lord's healing power, love, and mercy out to a world that is in such desperate need. As your local Catholic radio apostolate, we are humbled and mightily blessed to have your loyal support. For our new listeners who would be interested in joining us, we can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com.
Hello, my name is Peter Marsico. I am the general agent of Southern New Jersey and the state of Delaware for the Knights of Columbus. I lead a select team of 11 financial professionals who serve the Catholic community. We teach Catholic families about the importance of financial planning and how to secure their future. We give Catholic families the products they need to a company that shares their beliefs. With a company that has also has Standard & Poor's and AM Best highest ratings for several years. And we will not invest any of our money that's opposed to the moral teachings of the Catholic Church. You can reach me at 609-335-5189. You can email me at peter.marsico, M-A-R, S-I-C-O at K-O-F-C, short for Knights of Columbus, .org. I am blessed and honored to sponsor both Kathy and Joe's.
Folks, welcome back to Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer, along with Michael Rouse, co-founder, president, and CEO of ESF Camps and Experiences. Michael, I tell people all the time, in the last probably 3 to 4 years, you know, I've always been impressed with how people handle adversity, but I think the older I get, the more impressed I am with how people handle success. And I think, obviously, you've had some great influences. Your father, you know, not just giving you a fish for a meal, but teaching you how to fish for a lifetime. You know, you talked about some of your wife's impact on you. But, you know, I'm, at this point in my life, I'm even more impressed with how people handle success. And, you know, here you are. You're absolutely crushing it. You're the signature camp experience, certainly in the tri-state area. You know, and then, you know, you say, okay, well, that's not enough. I'm gonna make a commitment to the community, and I'm gonna take on this daunting task of helping to serve the underserved young people. So, talk about your decision to branch out with ESF. There you are. You have your summer camp. You know, incredibly successful business. Now you start to partner with some professional teams, and talk about, you know, how the vision, and then how that vision became a reality with your giving back and a lot of the charity work, you know, with ESF Dream Team, you know, Dream Camp Foundation, and some of those experiences that have transformed the lives of so many young people.
Sure. So it kind of started at day one for us, Joe, because you know, in 1982, when the head of school at Haverford School said to me, sure, you can have the courts if you just provide two kids with a chance to go to camp for free. That was a no-brainer. It was for me, it was, what's two extra spots? No problem. And I saw those two kids, by the way, change the behavior of all the other kids. I mean, they were so excited. It was like Christmas every day for them to come to camp. And when they were so excited, other kids would get it. It just caught. Everybody's, you know, everybody became so positive and excited about coming to camp every day. And, you know, we were young, my brother and I, when we were running the camp, and if it wasn't for these two kids who influenced the others who were attending, I think it wouldn't have been as fun. And so, in addition to that, you know, that same year, one of our first campers was my sister, Christine, who has cerebral palsy and was one of our first campers, like I just said, and really also influenced me to provide opportunities for kids like her to go to camp. And so, you know, from that moment on, as we were growing our camps, we would have a certain amount of free scholarships, and we'd obviously became like the only camp for people with disabilities if they'd ever want to come. You know, we would just do an assessment, and we would just make sure that this was going to be an experience for their kids that would be meaningful. If they had a physical disability, we wanted to understand, you know, have they ever played sports before? Would they like to play a particular sport, or is it more on the arts side? And so that started to be, that was a natural for us. Like, we were, you know, we just thought that's how you do it. And so, you know, people were nice enough to start to talk about us, about why were we doing this, and it was almost like, well, it's just because it's the right thing to do. Meanwhile, my sister was, you know, instrumental in continuing to push the envelope by saying, all right, now what else can we do? You know, let's do something for the kids that don't want to play sports. Can we do something on the arts side? And she started a program called Kids Are Kids, which she would go around to schools and our camps talking about disability awareness. And, you know, even to this day, when we're out to dinner somewhere, we'll have somebody come up and say, you spoke at my school, you know, 25 years ago. And you know, they're talking to her, not to me. And and so she's incredibly inspirational. And she started a program with me called Acting Without Boundaries about 10 years ago. And these were for kids who had physical disabilities who would want to perform. And a lot of them would try out for their high school show, and they would always be told by the director, you know, that's great, but, you know, we need you on stage crew. And so this was a program that was really dedicated for people in wheelchairs and walkers and who had physical disabilities. And we brought in an off-Broadway play producer and a Hollywood screenwriter and a musical director, and they would start to perform, you know, twice a year these major off-Broadway play productions. And they've played to sold-out shows of 750 people pre-pandemic, And they now have about 150 actors from ages 6 all the way up to probably 42 years old.
That's awesome.
With visual impairment, you know, complete blindness to people in walkers or wheelchairs or voice boxes. And we have two nonprofits. One is for Acting Without Boundaries with a separate set of board members. And then we also have a nonprofit called the ESF Dream Camp Foundation, which we serve about 500 at-risk youth year-round in both Philadelphia and also Hartford, Connecticut. And it's an after-school mentoring program and also a summer camp experience, tuition-free.
That's pretty awesome. Talk about, if you could, obviously you have incredibly strong faith. The daily mass is a big part of your spiritual relationship with Christ and God. What are there any other, the thing I say all the time is there's so many avenues that we can worship, right? We have saintly intercession, we have confession, we have adoration, we have the rosary, we have the novena. Are there any, in addition, your faith is incredibly strong. Obviously you're going to mass every day. Are there any other areas of devotion that we have access to as Catholics that you find yourself practicing or being attracted
to? Yeah, so besides daily mass, I am trying to go to confession at least every 2 to 3 weeks just as a ritual. And my son is getting ready for confession, and so he attends daily mass with me almost every day. And so as we're talking about Mass and as we're talking about the sacrament of confession, it has been just a really great kind of exercise for he and I to do, where we're traveling to church and we're talking about it. And so confession for me has been important, especially as the sacrament is approaching for my son. In addition to that, I try to do a daily novena to Padre Pio. And that has been very, very special for me. Not to mention, usually during Lent, I'll do another novena as well. But I usually do a daily Padre Pio novena. That has been extremely influential for me.
That's cool. So many, the beauty of Catholicism, right? We have so many opportunities and ways to worship in addition to the sacramental mass. Pretty awesome. Let's talk about you're having incredible success, right? You have a beautiful family, great business, and then 2020 hits, and all of a sudden we're thrown into this pandemic, which for us we're on the same age you are, so it's probably we didn't live through any world wars. We had some conflicts, but we didn't have any catastrophic. We did live through 9/11, which was catastrophic, but this is something that, the likes of Michael Rouse and Joe Traynor and our age cohort, we've never really had we didn't live through a depression or a stock market crash or anything like that, but, in comes this crazy pandemic. And how has that forced ESF to pivot and to come out of this, even stronger than ever?
Yeah, I mean it's you're so true. I mean we're close to the same age, and we've seen it all. We've seen inflation, we've seen 9/11, we've seen the market crash in 2008, and we've been very fortunate enough to be resilient through these really, really challenging financial crisis times. But a year ago, we made the difficult decision to cancel our summer programs solely for public health reasons, and we really found ourselves a year ago living through an unprecedented time as the situation with COVID-19 grew more challenging on a daily basis, really impacting everybody on this planet. And where it was really real, it was very real, and it was and significant health risks and impacts were happening. And for us, it was so raw. I mean, we could not really get our hands around what was happening to really be able to come out and be confident. That cancellation of our 2020 summer season was really the only way to ensure for us that people would be safe, our campers, our staff, their families, and you know, children and team member safety has always been our guiding principle and priority, and we would be really going against our core values if we were to have operated. And we really could not see a way through the CDC guidelines at that point where it would have been a positive and safe experience. We would have really turned into like the COVID police. We would have been, you know, it would not have been good. And as a result, the cancellation of the camp season in 2020 caused, you know, a pretty significant short-term strain on the organization, and a small group of frustrated parents were upset with us because we ruined their summer plans. So, you know, some of them were lawyers, and they were quite angry and upset. And because of these realities, and ensure that we could navigate through these financial challenges that were ahead of us, you know, we took certain measures immediately with furloughing staff. I went out and started to raise money. And we applied for federal funding to just to stay alive. And I promised anybody and everyone who had money with us, you know, for camp, that we would honor it the next summer, or I would pay them in full back over the course of the several months. You know, I just want to take a moment just to provide some context on the struggles of what our industry was doing. It was very similar to what a restaurant was going through, and a typical independent camp has small margins, and you know, we didn't have an endowment to draw from, and every year we would reinvest our camper tuition in the camp infrastructure, our year-round staff of 47 people, supplies, curriculum design, recruitment, and operational costs, and everything that, you know, has made our service a gold standard for the past, you know, 39 years for our families. So you know, this business strategy was very effective until the pandemic took hold of the country last year, and it really shortened our selling season and our cycle, and it really made us decide, all right, it's better to just not operate. And, you know, it really placed great financial pressure on us, just like any other small businesses that operated. And we were seeing a number of competitors of ours not give refunds. They were getting sued left and right. They were filing Chapter 11. There was class action lawsuits. We came out very early by saying, we're paying everybody back. Just bear with us and let us, you know, try to get through this typhoon. And so there is no doubt our industry was one of the hardest hit on so many levels. And we were very fortunate to have the professional teams like the Phillies and the 76ers and Arsenal and all of our school partners who were so great by saying, look, we're in this with you, and we're going through the similar challenges, but we'll all get through this. And we're very fortunate to have them on our side as well. And so, you know, we made some difficult decisions over those months a year ago that I would never have anticipated in my 39 years working in this business. And you know, for me, it was a humbling and moment. I was incredibly grateful for the passion and dedication that each of my staff members showed during this really difficult time, and the resilience. I mean, we lost no one. They all, when they took furlough, they all came back. And it really was a testament to the strong team that we had and that we now have. And it really, it's what makes our work in this organization so special, and it's really what got us through it. People believed in what we did. They believed in the mission. They never gave up. They realized what we were going through, and they had faith. And I'm so blessed to have this incredible team that I would go through another one of these if we had to with each and every one of them.
Well, it's also a credit to you and your character, because, believe me, the Phillies and some of those professional organizations didn't believe in you and your mission and the value that you were bringing. They certainly could have cut bait and walked away at that point, too. You bring up a couple points. You know, you talked about your wife and her, you know, having some personal challenges within her family, you know, and faith. You know, she relies on her faith. You know, you coming, you know, having, you know, some of the hardship that you've had, you know, professionally and personally, relying on your faith. And, you know, I feel like, you know, and I said this to my kids. I said, you know, I will fail you 50 times this week alone. I'll fail mom, you know, 100 times. I said, but, you know, your faith is there when no one else is. And, you know, I just feel, you know, it's hard for me to imagine not having those dark periods in my own life where if I didn't have a strong faith, I don't know if I would have had the resolve to endure those things. You know, hearing your wife and her steadfastness, you know, in her commitment to her faith and Christ, and then hearing, you relying on your faith to get through, you know, those the challenging, you know, the challenge you have. How many people, Michael, are full-time employees for you?
We have 46 people full-time.
And like, so not only do you have the burden of providing for, you know, the Rouse family of six, the beautiful family you have, but you're feeling pressure. Man, you got people that are, you have families, you know, you have, upwards of 40 families that's a daunting task to take on, and you're trying to keep people with jobs and keep people afloat. But pretty amazing, when you think about when faith is there for us when no one else is. It's amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I mentioned, by falling forward, that's really what you got to do, because everybody's going to fail, and you just fail fast, keep moving. And I talk to my kids about this all the time, and versus, being polarized and, why me? Why not? I know when a good friend of mine, while I was driving down to CHOP, my wife and I, our little girl was at CHOP for, I guess, really the first 4 months she was born, and she and I would, take shifts, and I would always go down late night to see her, and a friend of mine called me from out west to check and see how, the family was doing, and he was he's a special friend. His son died of cancer when he was a teenager, and I knew his son, and I just was so impressed by how this family got through those difficult years, and they just stayed in the state of gratitude the entire time. And my friend Lee Brower said to me, Michael, I know this is a difficult time, but just realize that, there's curveballs that come at you all the time in life, and you can never think about why is this happening to me. You have to really think about and reflect on why is this happening for me. And that was a really powerful statement. It was a profound statement for me, because it did make me stop and think, am I feeling sorry right now, or am I trying to figure this thing out? And it was something that I'll never forget. And it's really just using your faith to get through these difficult moments. And if you've got your faith, you're going to get through it.
Absolutely. I'm reminded of the line, comparison is the thief of happiness. I think you touched on it very eloquently. Like, when we have gratitude, it dissipates, the why me attitude. It kind of just realize, man, this particular hardship that I'm enduring at this particular moment in time, like, compare in the grand scheme of problems out there, it's minuscule. And I think anytime I know when I'm feeling sorry for myself, or I'm feeling some resentment or whatever, If I can ask God for gratitude, and peace in my heart, it all dissipates. It all, the anger, the bitterness, the resent, just feel like just leave your body, and it's because of gratitude. And what a gift that is too, right?
Absolutely. I mean, my dad always said, you'll be really happy, personally and professionally, if you love life, so make sure you always love life. And that's what I did. That's what I try to do every day.
That's it. And definitely, I can see you doing that too. Hey, listen, before we go, I got to ask you. So, the foundation was laid. I'm gonna say you're a self-made man, but you had a lot, and you would be the first to admit, you had a lot of mentors and support and people that believed in you, but. I'm thinking of your father. I'm an Irish Catholic myself, and that old school tough love. I often think about this. Like, what's the generation that says, your parents gave you everything humanly possible, and they still it wasn't enough to saturate you, right, or spoil you. You know what I mean? And here
right.
We are. We're 53 in that same era, and we don't realize it at the time right now, but I tell my kids we're in the top 1% of the world in terms of how we live our life and what we have access to, right? We're in the top 1% of the world. But, you know, what do you think about, what's the balance for you as now a first-generation college graduate, incredibly successful business owner? Like, I find myself with my own three children kind of navigating through that world of, I mean, your father, you know, he laid a foundation. Like, there you are, man. You're in high school, and you're hustling with the, you know, you're a St. Al's kid, and you're meeting with the headmaster of the school trying to talk about a business plan to hustle, you know, $1,800 out for summer work that you needed to keep going. Like, it's just, it's, how do you as a parent use that experience to teach your own children to fish, if that makes any sense?
So my dad was a very street smart guy. He, you know, even though he didn't have a chance to finish high school or go to college, he was incredibly street smart. And what I mean by that is he taught me some life lessons about surrounding yourself with great people, you know, take things one step at a time and everything else will fall into place. You know, he taught me kind of how to get to first base without, you know, then how to get to second. And then when you're on second, how to get to third. And then the home runs will happen on their own. He also really said, you know, your name is all that you have, so protect it. It's all about integrity. Don't ever let people down. When you say you're going to do something, do it. And so these basic life lessons for me also exposed me to, he always said, you know, mentorship is really important. Mm. And so I surround myself with other mentors in my life, which they inspired me. Like Larry Bossidy, he was the CEO of Honeywell, and you know, Eustace Wolfington, who's from the area, and Yusmita, they both built this incredible business called Half a Car, and other people like Jim Lehrer, who is this high performance sports psychologist who's written tons of books on character, coached 17 number one athletes in the world in 6 different sports. So I was, over the years, I've never stopped growing. I've always had mentors in my life. Pat Croce, when I was a young teenager. You know, I saw how he was building sports physical therapists. He was very influential in my life. So watching these people, you know, live life to the fullest, but at the same time building something that was meaningful and impactful. And so being able to look at these individuals and to see what they've built is what excites me. And I'm always trying to self-develop. Even my grandfather at age 95, he was always still working on his golf swing. You know, he wasn't out playing golf, but he was looking at the mirror, trying to, you know, have that perfect swing. And that's kind of in our DNA. We always want to get better. And so that's something I grew up with. And my parents have been very influential in allowing us to go that direction.
What a misconception. Sometimes I think, you know, at least I did. When I'm 21 or when I graduate from college or when I get my first legit job or, you know, we don't realize, and I think particularly for males with mentorship, because you know there's the alpha male in you that says, you know, I don't necessarily need help, and you realize, you know, shortly after, if you want to be successful, find successful people, even if it's in different lanes of, you know, professional lanes, it doesn't matter, because I'm listening to all the people that have mentored you, you know, some of them aren't even sports people, certainly. You know, they're not in the camp, you know, industry. So, you know, the need to just surround yourself not with just with great people, but really great influences and great mentors. And that's great insight and great value that you share with our viewers. Listen, brother, our time is up. This has been awesome. I definitely plan on bringing you back, because I think we only scratched the surface of some of this stuff. But this has been a blessing for me to have you on the show. For the last hour, and I know our listeners, I'll get a ton of great feedback from this show. Awesome. Wish you well this summer, brother. Praying for clear skies and great health and safety out there as ESF takes the next step forward.
God bless you. Thanks, Joe.
You too, brother. You have a great week, everyone. God bless.